Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 25th, 2014. Four SPLM political detainees accused of attempting to overthrow President Salva Kiir are now free men.
We will be engaging both the government and SPLM, SPLA in opposition to end this senseless war that is killing our people.
And fighting continues in Unity State with the opposition and government forces arguing over who controls Mayom County.
Today, the SPLA recaptured Mayom town. That is the only thing that is new this morning.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Four senior politicians who were detained by South Sudan in connection with alleged coup attempt were released by a special court in Juba today after the government said it was no longer interested in pursuing the case. As Charlton Doki reports from Juba, the four politicians were received by hundreds of their supporters.
Relatives and friends of the four detainees cheered as Justice James Alala Deng, head of the five-judge panel hearing the case, read a statement on releasing the senior politicians to a packed courtroom. Afterward, women ululated as men sang revolutionary songs. Outside the courtroom, the four former detainees were carried shoulder high. Some of the relatives of the detainees shed tears of joy. Minutes after their release, former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum spoke to reporters on behalf of the group.
I would like to thank all the people of South Sudan and to thank the youth, the women, and all the members of SPLM. I am also grateful to our friends who stood behind us during the long period of our unjustified incarceration, to all our friends who stood behind us inside South Sudan and in the IGAD member countries and demanded that we be released.
Amum lashed out at the government for detaining them for long, when in his words it was clear from the very beginning that the government had no case against them. While he welcomed their release, Amum said he would have preferred for the court itself to issue a not guilty verdict.
They don't have evidence against us, and the whole thing was just fabricated. Withdrawing the case is withdrawing away from justice, because they saw that the legal proceedings were tilting in our favor and that we were soon going to be exonerated. That's why they took this preemptive step of withdrawing the case. They withdrew the case and we are free now, but I say we were always free, even when in detention.
Amum says now that they are free, their immediate objective is to contribute towards the efforts to restore peace in the country.
And we will be engaging both the government and SPLM, SPLA in opposition to end this senseless war that is killing our people, to end this war, and we work for a peaceful, free and prosperous South Sudan.
Defense lawyer Monyiluak Alor says the defense team achieved their objective.
We have consistently been saying that these are innocent people, these are innocent people, these are innocent people, and at last we got there. They are innocent.
Alor says he hopes the release of his clients will help restore peace across the country and reconcile the South Sudanese as a united people. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
President Salva Kiir says he gave the order to drop the case against the four political prisoners in a bid to speed up the peace process in South Sudan. Speaking at a news conference in Juba, he acknowledged he was also under pressure from regional leaders to drop the charges against the four. Andrew Green has the story for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir says he hopes today's release of the four political prisoners will encourage communities to begin reconciling.
These are the prices for peace. the four that were released yesterday, plus the seven that were released before, even if you were to hang them, that will not compensate the thousands of people that have been lost. This one is better.
But Mr. Kier says the release does not mean there will be no justice for the people who have lost family members during the ongoing crisis across the country.
We have ordered the stay of criminal procedures for the four accused. This doesn't include Riek Machar, does not include Alfred Taban, Alfred Lado, and does not include Taban Denga. These are the people who are not covered by this thing. But for those who were under arrest, they have come out. Anytime that they are needed, if the criminal procedures can be revived against them.
Information Minister Michael Makuei-Lueth says the decision follows President Kiir's visit with regional leaders earlier this month.
He said the international community had been pressing on him so that for the release of these people. And as such, he has responded by releasing these people, hoping that these people will not follow suit, that they will not behave like their colleagues who were released before and they decided to go and form a third party in the peace talks. So he's saying we have released them with the hope that we will all work together for peace and stability.
The government released the other seven political detainees in January after deciding they did not have enough evidence to charge them with a crime. The seven men have asked to participate in ongoing peace talks in Addis Ababa as a separate party, despite objections from both the government and opposition. Makui says regardless of who is at the table, the government is committed to participating in the peace talks, scheduled to restart on Monday. President Kiir also announced that South Sudan will have a national prayer event asking for peace on the 3rd and 4th of May in Juba. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green in Juba.
Government forces today say they have recaptured Unity State's Mayom town, a claim opposition strongly denied. For VOA, Lucy Pony has more on that story from Nairobi.
Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says taking control of Mayom is a big plus for the government.
Today, the SPLA recaptured Mayom town. That is the only thing which is new this morning. It means the government forces has recaptured all the places that are under the rebel.
A military spokesperson for the opposition, Lul Roy Kong, dismisses Aguer's statement.
The government is not in control of Mayom. We are in control of Mayom. You know, the government is fond of making false statements. Even the day before yesterday, they issued a statement saying that they had captured our youth. Also, there was a rumor that they had captured, they recaptured rank from us. Definitely, it is not true that they are in control of Mayom.
Lul also asserts that on Wednesday, heavy fighting took place in Paren County, where rebel fighters killed Sudanese Justice and Equality Movement generals, captured others, and confiscated vehicles with GEM initials on them. Opposition forces have repeatedly accused the Sudanese rebels of fighting alongside government forces. And Lul says this time they have proof.
There was a major fight and our forces defeated back the attacking forces. They killed 69, including the two generals. And I'm taking this opportunity to inform all the interested parties and the stakeholders. If they want material evidence of GEM involvement, then they should contact us. Because it has been difficult in the past to prove to outsiders that GEM is deeply involved.
Aguera staunchly denies Lul's statement and went one step further.
That is a lie. We don't have any GEM fighters. It's a cover-up of the civilian that they have massacred in Bentiu.
Lul did not discuss the massacre in Bentiu, which was condemned by the United Nations, the United States and other Western allies. Meantime, both government and opposition forces confirm heavy fighting is underway in Dukpadiet of Jonglei State today. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
The governor of Unity State, Joseph Moin Twil, says government forces are now battling rebels to recapture Bentiu. He says international community must investigate what he calls crimes against humanity committed in Bentiu town earlier this week. Moin Twil says his government is committed to protect civilians from rebels accused of carrying out targeted ethnic killings.
Bentiu
is under control of the rebel groups from that day. And our forces now are on move toward Banjo. I think today we recaptured Mayom from the rebel group, and we are marching toward Banjo town.
When was Mayom recaptured?
This morning. It was recaptured this morning.
What is the next move now that Mayom is under your control? Where are you intending to go next?
Our next move is toward Banjo, to recapture Banjo from the rebel groups and restore peace and security there. Because what they have done to the innocent civilians is something unacceptable. The killing of innocents, Darfurians, traders, as well as their families, and even innocent citizens from the United States, mainly those who hail from Mem County, were also killed in that massacre.
Why were people from that county you were mentioning targeted?
Some government officials who are civilians who hail from Mayom County were also killed, as well as citizens from Pariang and Adiamnam counties were also targeted in Mems.
Bentiu was heavily guarded because that is a strategic town and there are lots of oil field installations in Unity State. What went wrong?
Due to some technical mistake that had happened, the forces were not able to defend the town. And we don't want to dwell much on this issue because we are in the process of correction of whatever went wrong during that day.
The United Nations issued a statement saying that the rebels have been targeting certain communities in Unity State. Who are these communities who are targeted?
The communities from these two counties, plus Mayom County, were targeted by the rebels simply because they are supporters of the government, they are supporters of the peace and reconciliation. And
the rebels are saying that the people they killed in Bentiu, who are from Sudan, are not normal citizens. They are fighters of justice and equality movement.
Yeah, definitely that's not true. That's not true. Even the rebels themselves knows where our BGM forces are. Those who were killed are innocent traders who came to support the people of the state.
But were there presence of BGM fighters in Bentiu?
I think the best answer should come from the rebels themselves. Where have they seen BGM? They should not pretend that whoever from Darfur is a member of BGM. That's a wrong explanation of the membership of BGM.
To the people outside South Sudan, they look at South Sudanese as one people. People are wondering, someone like you, are you communicating with these people who have taken up arms to fight the government in Juba? Because you are one people.
We have been communicating with them so that they should refrain from what they are doing. But it seems that they are not responding. They don't listen to words of wisdom and peace. We'll do whatever possible to protect the territorial integrity of South Sudan.
That's Joseph Montuil, the governor of Unity State. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear what you have to say about our programs.
You
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think can be done to reduce discrimination against ethnic groups?
It's a big job to be done, but to me, I think it's a work that we should do together as a whole nation, as a government, as an individual. It's a journey that we must take and we must be willing to do.
You know, what I believe is that change begins with one person. So if all of us can accept change, each and every one of us, then we will begin to think positive about ourselves. And then I will see you as a brother, I will see you as my sister, anyone else, and we'll begin to value each other and see that we are very important.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
We're listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Uten. It's time for your comments. Many of you commented on the firing of the country's top military official and the release of four political detainees. Someone who refers to himself as Adut Madu from Infantry SPLA Division 8 says he welcomes the recent removal of the SPLA chief, General James Hoff Mai, who Madu says has weakened the SPLA and failed to control many defections from the army. He adds, "I thank President Salva Kiir for a job well done." Ngor Ring in Juba writes, "The removal of the SPLA's chief marks the start of a good journey towards peaceful resolution of the current crisis because General James Hoth Mai failed to transform the SPLA into a better national army of South Sudan. That is to say, a huge number of SPLA soldiers defected to the rebel side." He concludes, "So as an SPLA soldier, I welcome this move towards restoring peace by the president." Akeen Dang, a student in Juba, thanks President Kiir for forgiving the group that attempted a coup against his government because Dang says, as stated in the Bible, they do not know what they are doing. Dang says, "We also condemn all those who are calling for the formation of an interim government. We stand by your side and support your leadership and your legitimately elected government." Lam Pot in Juba does not see it that way, saying, "The release of four political detainees will not bring peace and reconciliation as the government wishes." Pot continues, "South Sudan will return to normal only if there is, one, a change in the current leadership, and two, justice. The peace and reconciliation people are talking about will come only after the first two items are met." Dr. Andrew Angelo Massine from Yambio, Western Equatoria State writes, "Since South Sudan gained independence, we have not had real peace at all. This is because of tribalism and disunity among us. We all should know that our common tribe is South Sudan." Jacob Bior in Rumbek Lakes State agrees, adding, "It is an abomination if the two warring parties cannot recognize the suffering of the innocent people of South Sudan. We did not fight for decades and vote for independence in 2011 only to return to war." And finally, Mamer Akun Bol in Gogrial, Warup State writes, "It is very unfortunate that the South Sudan conflict has escalated into killings of innocent civilians without mercy. I urge the international community to move quickly to impose sanctions on people on both sides of the conflict responsible for the massacre in Bentiu, Bor, and Juba." We want to hear what you think. You can text us or find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
We read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of a commentator only. Comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or the Voice of America. There are only 7 primary schools in the Rhino settlement camp in Arua, Uganda, but thousands of South Sudanese-aged children have arrived into the camp since the fighting broke out in December. The refugees are asking for more schools and more money as soon as possible. VOA's Taban Bonifacio traveled to Arua and has this story.
When Emmanuel Fitagai fled fighting in Juba for the safety of Uganda Rhino resettlement camp, he did not realize he would have to abandon his education.
Our confluent, we don't have a second area. We people of our second area, we don't have a second area. We said we have our education now.
Guy said he is worried he will have to give up on his dream of becoming a doctor. Peter Lamgalua is the deputy chairman of a SIA cluster, said most of the children living in the camp are idols. Around 15,000 South Sudanese refugees have settled in Rhino camp of the more than 98,000 who fled to Uganda. Galua said that means 100, if not 1,000, of children are not going to school.
Those who are in secondary school, like senior 4 or senior 6, even those who have completed primary school, they are not continuing their education because of lack of schools. That's why you see them roaming around the camp.
Assistant Settlement Officers Abili David knows about the school shortage at the camp. He said there are 7 primary schools in operation, which can educate up to 2,000 students, but that include severely overcrowded classroom. David said they simply do not have enough money and equipment to open more schools.
The UNICEF, they have helped us by bringing tents because we are lacking classrooms, so they have installed those tents and we are using them as classrooms. But our major challenge is that we don't have teachers' quarters and we don't have enough learning space in terms of classroom, and we are also lacking accommodation for teachers.
David said one option might be for private school to open in or near the camp for the student to attend. He said one is under construction near the camp now and should open within a few months.
There's somebody, a private person, who is planning to open that school. But although he's going to open the school privately, it needs school fees from our clients. But basically, the refugees, they are desperate. They cannot afford to pay school fees.
David said he hoped that the problem will come to the attention of the governments and international aid agencies so that many more young South Sudanese refugees can attend school in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban.
A professor at Khartoum University says Islamic radicals affiliated with Sudan's ruling party are terrorizing students on campus. Analysts say those government-sponsored jihad units that are responsible for the death of Ali Akbar, the Darfur student who was shot in March during a student protest.
Ismet Mahmoud is Vice Chancellor at University of Khartoum's College of Art. He says most Sudanese public universities have a heavy presence of armed pro-government student groups who stash their weapons on campus and are organized in what he calls jihadi units.
We have to get rid of the jihadi units that everyone is talking about right now. It is from those units that students from out of our campus come and operate on our campus. We are talking about individuals who may or may not be students. They come here and they acquire weapons, whether firearms or knives and steel rods.
Last week, the University of Khartoum released a statement confirming there are jihadi units operating on campus and calling for them to be removed. University of Khartoum spokesperson Abdul Malik Al Naim says the school is investigating the murder case of Ali Abakar.
The university have formed a legal committee to investigate and to collect data, and a legal committee has been formed by the Ministry of Justice.
Sar Hatim is a member of the student union at University of Khartoum. She says the killers of Ali Abakar are students recruited by the government. Hatim says the students have several demands, among them safe and secure campus.
They're actually students and start shooting the people. There are our colleagues who contributing to the government. We have some demands for our university managers. Investigation in the murder of our colleague Ali Bakr in a serious way and put the killer in Israel, removing the jihadi units and all the violent units in our university, giving punishment to the university security guards for being partially responsible for the action that happened, and finally guaranteeing a full secure environment for the students and the staff inside our university.
Sara says unless the university administration takes the investigation of the murder of Ali Abubakar seriously, the students at University of Khartoum will continue to protest and demand justice for their colleague. For VOA News, I am May Abdel Nasser in Washington.
And the World Health Organization says investing in malaria control is good health policy and makes good economic sense. In marking World Malaria Day today, the WHO says the battle against this preventable and treatable disease can be won with increased financial support. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Great progress is being made in controlling malaria, and the World Health Organization thinks now is the time to capitalize on this success. John Reeder, the acting director of the WHO's Global Malaria Program, says international funding for malaria control has increased from $100 million in 2000 to $1.94 billion in 2012. He tells VOA that during that time, malaria death rates have decreased 42% globally and 49% in Africa. He says more than 3 million children's lives have been saved.
So clearly ramping up investment in malaria can work and does work. And we've seen things like the vast expansion of bed net programs. You know, over the last couple of years, it's gone from 70 million nets that went out in 2012 to 136 million last year, and this year there's going to be somewhere in the region of 200 million nets put out there.
Despite this progress, malaria remains a worldwide scourge, especially in Africa. WHO figures show 207 million cases of malaria, including 627,000 deaths. The UN Health Agency says 90% of these deaths have occurred among children under five in sub-Saharan Africa. WHO notes 80% of malaria cases are found in 18 African countries, with Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of Congo accounting for half of those cases. It says malaria disproportionately affects the poor and badly affects African economies. It estimates Africa loses $12 billion each year in lost productivity. It says the disease places a heavy burden on national health systems, accounting for as much as 40% of public health expenditure in some countries. Dr. Reeder says it is possible to slow the spread of the disease, but he notes one of the problems affecting malaria control is the difficulty of delivering effective programs in the context of a weakened health system.
So, malaria in itself is a disease which has got particular needs and really needs an investment. But part of that investment really has got to be in strengthening health systems in a more general way.
He says the International Rollback Malaria Program will need $5.1 billion every year through 2020 to provide insecticide-treated nets, indoor spraying, quick diagnostic testing and treatment for all those at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Anana, get it there. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a song by Mede Muzika.
Don't have a roof.
We have been listening to a little bit of music from Mede Muzika. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.